Hospital, Ohio, if you would. Good evening, brothers and sisters. I'm sure you'll agree with me that we've had a very nice day, and we give God the thanks that we belong to the congregation of the living. Last week, in the consideration of this letter of the Apostle Paul to the Ecclesia of Corinth, we spent most of our time giving an introduction to the letter regarding the situation of Corinth in the country of Greece. And we spent most of our time on the subject concerning the location of Corinth and all the situation of its history, the people who lived there, and the advantages of belonging to that city and such like. And the trouble and the difficulties that the Ecclesia had to contend with being in this location because of the situation of this city of Corinth. And so we maybe spent a little bit more time than we should have done in the consideration of the backdrop of this, on this subject of the Second Corinthians. But I think it was a very important one for us. And I've mentioned already the fact that it was a letter of this father, the Apostle Paul, to this ecclesia, which he was very, very much concerned about. Concerned to the point that we know it is recorded that in writing the letters or having someone write them for him, that it was with many tears. And if we could have seen those original letters, I'm sure that we would have seen the tear stain on the letters that were passed from ecclesia to ecclesia. And with it, there was the realization of those brothers and sisters that this apostle appointed by God was in extreme anxiety regarding their spiritual welfare, because he could see that there was a possibility that they could commit spiritual suicide. I emphasize the fact of the letter because I think this is an art that's been lost today, and that is the writing of letters in the way that the Apostle Paul did. We write many letters, as we know, by email, but I don't think they carry with it the same personal and emotional touch that a handwritten letter does. And I'm sure all of you received handwritten letters, and you have felt a closer touch with a person that is writing to you, a personal, emotional touch. There seems to be a closer association with that individual. And so it is that I think that this is, as I said already, this is an art that seems to be lost today. There's not many handwritten letters from one individual to another. And I think it's a thing that maybe we should develop or go back to that old way of communication, of feeling comfortable in being able to write letters to each other. I think people who are in a hospital and people who are going through difficulties and people who are contending with problems of life that I've communicated with and talked to, when they receive a letter, a handwritten letter, it seems to give them, as the subject that the Apostle Paul deals with in this letter, it gives them a comfort that can come from no other source. So this evening, we don't want to spend a lot of time on this subject of an introduction regarding the history and the makeup, the location, the physical makeup of the city. Should you want this information, you can get the CD from Brother Lawrence afterwards, and on that you'll find all the information that you want to regarding this backdrop. Again, I think in as Bible students, it's essential that we do this, especially with the letters the Apostle Paul wrote and Peter wrote. I think it's essential to see there, because if you can walk the streets of Corinth, Ephesus, or any of those, you will realize what these men and women were contending with to keep the truth alive and to be able to build up the ecclesias. And this, we have it very easy today in our part of our world, especially in preaching the truth, to the extent that we are not as forceful as we should be in preaching the truth and contending for it. Now, the Apostle Paul was, as we know, he was in Corinth, and he was there preaching for one reason only. And that reason was, as we know, that he was sent of God, that he was appointed to be an apostle unto the Gentiles, and he was the vehicle, the messenger, the ambassador, the apostle, whatever you like to give him his title, on behalf of Jesus Christ, to give all people, both Jews and Gentiles, the opportunity of salvation. And so this is why, as we know, when we find the Apostle Paul in Athens contending with the Stoics and all those other very wise men of this world, debating with them and having little effect on them, he found it almost impossible to bend their way of thinking to his, that when he went to Corinth, he was a very depressed man, as like Jeremiah, and many of the apostles, and many of the prophets, when they preached, they had difficulties in preaching and influence people, and it was a depressing thing, just the same as any of us who have preached to others and then find that they don't finalize our teaching to them, talking to them of being baptized. It's a very disappointing and depressing feeling sometimes. So the Apostle Paul, as we know, he left Athens and he went to Corinth because he was guided by the Spirit. And God told him. It almost as if Paul questioned you. God said, hey, why have you brought me here? I've had enough problems in Athens. Now you bring me to this city, which is so cluttered with so many religions and so many evil things. It's not possible that anybody will listen to the preaching of the word, the preaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ. But God said to him, it's almost as if God put him against the wall and said, Paul, I have much people in this, in this city. And he said, then spake the Lord to Paul in the night by a vision and said, Paul, don't be afraid, but speak and hold not thy peace. For I am with thee, and no man shall set on thee to hurt thee. As long as I need you, there will be a barrier around you. Nobody touch you. Roman authorities, the Judaizers, the opposers within the ecclesia, because he says, I have a purpose for you, and I will allow no man to set on thee to hurt thee. For I have much people in the sea. And so it was that he continued preaching there for, as we know, 16 months. So, brothers and sisters, before we go into the study of the letter itself into chapter 1, there's a couple of questions that maybe we should answer. And the first one is, how many letters did the Apostle Paul actually write in his lifetime? How many letters did the Apostle Paul actually write to Corinth? Well, the answer is we don't really know. We look at the letters that we have contained in the holy oracles of God, and we say, well, there they are. But it seems that the Apostle Paul used this vehicle of writing as a means of constantly being in touch with his ecclesias. And I'm sure that, as we know, and those who have done research on the construction of our scriptures and that, they confess from their research that there must have been many letters that Paul wrote that have been lost with the passing of time. So it would almost seem that God, in giving us the opportunity to listen, Paul, he said, this is sufficient. These chapters, these letters that have been, have remained should belong to the holy oracles, and they will be sufficient unto all generation to be persuaded of turning away from those things which are evil and walk in the ways of Jesus the Christ. And so it is we know that he wrote more than the two letters. We generally look at the letters written to Corinth, and we say, well, he only wrote two letters to Corinth. Now, then itself is which surprises, because he had a lot of contact with this ecclesia. He demanded a lot of them. He saw that he had to be like a physician, that not to attend to them once in a while, but but on a daily basis, because it was a possibility of being a dying ecclesia. So we know that when we go to the 1 Corinthians chapter 5, we remember there that it appears that the Apostle Paul wrote a letter prior to what we call the first epistle. For he says in the 1 Corinthians chapter 5, this is part of his letter, that part of the first as we know it, he says, I wrote unto you in an epistle not to company with fornication. And so we know that trouble that they were having in that ecclesia. It was a major thing that's mentioned in the first letter. It was a difficult thing, and it was affecting the whole health of the ecclesia. It brought about a division amongst the ranks. And so Paul had to concentrate on this, and he wrote a letter before the first letter that we have. So the first letter, which we call the 1 Corinthians, actually, as far as we know, is the second letter, because he'd already written one. So the other question that we have to address ourselves is, how many times did the Apostle Paul actually visit this ecclesia? Well, it would appear that he visited there at least 3 or 4 times. I believe that he visited there more often than that. On his journeys, his second and third journey, he was sidetracked when he was going into Macedonia and bypassing Corinth. He would call in there, and he would just review the situation and make them conscious that this apostle, this father of the churches, were just on the fringe on their ecclesia, so that they should be aware, just the same as we should be aware, that on the fringe of our ecclesia in our life, Jesus Christ is present. For he, as we know, he is the one that walks amongst the candlesticks, as recorded in Revelation. So it would seem that his first visit to this ecclesia of Corinth is recorded for us, as we know, in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 18. I've already mentioned that. That is the first one. And this happened during his second missionary journey. We know that he had 3 missionary journeys established, possibly 4. But this first visit, as we know, was in the second missionary journey. And then he had another one. As I mentioned last week, he had the second visit, which is recorded in Acts 20, verse 3. And there it says, it is recorded, that he visited there for a shorter time of 3 months. And I believe that this is one of those visits that he had slipped into his agenda or his schedule because he had heard of things spoken and he had to go there and review the situation. So that would be the second. And then there was the occasion later on, things were really getting difficult within the ecclesia. And he had to go there, and on the third missionary journey, we know that he, in this letter we're considering here, he tells them that he would intended to visit them. It is recorded in the latter part of his letter, of this second letter, recorded in chapter 12 and at verse 13. And this is where they had a little difficult and questioned. And they question Paul in his sincerity, because they say, well, he keeps talking about visiting us, and then he changes his plans, and he goes off in another direction. They didn't realize why Paul took that action. But he says in chapter 12, verse 14, he said, behold, the third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for their parents, but the parents for the children, and so on. Then into chapter 13, he said, this is the third time I am coming to you. So during that time, it would appear, as he seems to indicate on another occasion, that he visited them during that third journey twice. And he went there, as we know, because of the difficulties that were at hand. The other thing that we mentioned last week, which is important to repeat at this time for the benefit of those who are not here, and that is that so the first letter and the second letter, they don't appear to be in a chronological order. And I think students who have studied this and the contents of this letter seem to indicate, as most of us know, that this, the letter that he wrote to this ecclesia is classed by all the Bible scholars and the commentaries as the most severe letter that Paul ever wrote. This is the most severe letter of all other letters to all other ecclesias. If you put them up and you analyze them, it would be the most severe. Because he said things as a father does his child sometimes. He has to be severe to prevent them destroying themselves. He spoke strong language. And he regretted in a sense later on that having written it because of the contents. So that would appear, according to most commentators on that, that severe letter is contained from chapter 9 to chapter 13. And from chapter 1 to chapter 9, that is, the reconciliation of this man to his family, to his ecclesia, because now here in the reconciliation, they seem to come a closer relationship, things have been solved, and so on. So in order to make our study easier, we should by right start at chapter 10, but we're just going to go through from chapter to chapter, from chapter 1, continue on in our studies, as we shall later on if the Lord permits it. Now, it would be wise if you open your Bibles to chapter 1, because we're going to go through the verses, and there's so much contained in this, so much exhortation and education for us in our generation. And you can develop so many thoughts and of the Apostle Paul, of his love to the brothers. And sometimes, because we have belonged to an ecclesia so long, because we have been associated with one another, we lose the emotional side of living in Christ. We lose the closeness. We lose the attachment with one another expressed in the word love. I want you to think about that, because there is this tendency, and if it was reversed the other way, I think we would be a stronger ecclesia. We as individuals, we'd be more steadfast in our walk before God. And so when he opens his letters, as he often does, in a most beautiful way, in chapter 1, verse 1, he said, "This is the Apostle Paul, your father, who's writing unto you. I am Paul, an apostle unto Jesus Christ, by the will of God, and Timothy, our brother, unto the church of God, which is at Corinth, with all the saints which are in all Achaia." So there's many reasons why the apostle Paul framed the salutation in this way. And this is where we lose our, this is why we need to study our Bible, do research, because there is so much contained in a verse. I remember when I first came here in an English car, and I had I traveled quite a bit to work, so I had all this time. So I had this reel-to-reel tape recorder, and at that time the brethren were recording their talks and that on tapes. And so I got a brother to convert the tape recorder for me so that I could plug it into the cigarette lighter and I could listen to these tapes while I was going to work. I did this backward and forward, listening to A.D. Norris one time. Well, you know A.D. Norris when he speaks. First of all, he had a job to keep up with him, but the contents is so deep in what he's saying. And I found that I could listen to his tape, one tape, three times or four times, and every time I gained some further knowledge and inspirational thought from it. And this is why we have to study and appeal to our young people. We have to study the scriptures in this intent, because there's so much in this. And in this salutation, what the Paul is, the way he's dressing it this way, because he's trying to show to them the relationship, the depth of understanding, the emotional attachment that he has with Timothy, Silvanus, and all the others. And he's saying here, I am writing to you, and Paul's with me. And he's my brother. And we know later on he calls him my son. And so what he's telling the ecclesia, through this salutation is, this is the way you should be. And it wasn't, as it isn't in a lot of ecclesias. There is not 100% unity of thought, compassion, and love, and concern for one another. That's through the weakness of the flesh. It can't be helped, but it should be helped. And the closer we get to the attachment between Paul and Timothy and Silvanus, we would be a stronger ecclesia, and it would be an easier way for us to live the truth. If we knew that as Paul loved Timothy and Silvanus, if we knew it was there, it would be easier for us to get the full benefit of a service in the ecclesia and to live our lives. And so this is why the apostle Paul says that, do this. Be like Paul and Timothy. We're different. I'm sometimes aggressive and, as we know in this way, demanding and depressed. But Timothy, who's younger than me, he leans upon me and I lean upon him for his strength and for his youth and for his determination. So did that. So this is it when we unfortunately miss out on it, inasmuch as we address each other as brethren and sisters. Have you ever thought about that? You address each other as brother and sister. Do you really accept the brother that you're sitting next to, or talk to, or converse to, or they question the things you're saying? Do you really see him as a brother? Does a sister really see another sister as a sister? Because if you do, then you are of a family unit. And you know that a brother, physically, will do anything for his brother. The same as a sister for their sister. And we have seen it in our own lifetime. And this is what Jesus says. This is what Jesus said in John 14. He says, the whole world will know you through your preaching. Such a wonderful student of the Bible. He didn't say that. He said, the whole world will know you because you love one another. Does our world see us as loving each other and knit together in this way? And so we continue on, and we go into verse 3 and verse 4 and on. And this is one of the most beautiful, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful expressions and demonstrations and picture of God. And this is a wonderful, and when we listen to a talk, whether it's my talk or any other brother, whether it's a Bible class, whether it's a lecture, whether it's an exhortation, you're not going to remember all of it. I guarantee that. If you are, you're better than I, because I find it very difficult to remember things that are being said on Sunday, on Monday or Tuesday. So what we have to attain to ourselves is and develop is that whether it's a talk for an hour, half an hour, whatever, we have to try and grab hold on a statement that the brother has made. A very important. And if you do this and you remember it, because we've experimented with groups in this way and checked out later on, it's possible to do this and it becomes a stepping stone. So out of my talk this evening, if you don't remember anything, what I want you to remember is the title of the God who we worship. And the title that Paul gives them here for the benefit of the ecclesia is your God, the one that you worship, the one that you trust in, is this title. He is a God of all comforts. And I repeat that. He is a God of all comforts. And if you remember that verse or that statement or that title of God, and you remember it and say it in your mind first thing in the morning, throughout the day and night time, life is going to be a lot easier for you. Because now you realize and you understand, this will come to the forefront of your mind, whether you're having troubles within your ecclesia, whether you're having suffering with sickness and pain, whether you're having difficulties in your work, whether you're having difficulties in your location, if you have this imprinted on your mind or forehead, that regardless of everything in life, my God is a God of all comfort. And this is what Paul is trying to insert right at the beginning of this letter. We've discussed problems, difficulties with brethren and sisters that left the ecclesia. There's contention with them, but through it all, you will survive if you remember your God will comfort you in every way. And so we know that the Apostle Paul found it. What is the meaning of the word comfort in the Greek? It's beautiful in as much as the word means in the Greek coming alongside of. And so when we are difficulties of life, whatever they are, if we remember our God, we find our God by our side. And what other power can that we draw on? What other defense can we gain? What other barricade or a surrounding that we can ask for more to be able to deal with life than having the living God who reigns in the heavens above? So he is the God of all comfort. He comes along the side of us. And we know that, as it says later on, he says in verse, and I love these verses, for he says, who comforteth in all our tribulations, that we may be able to comfort them which are in trouble, by the comfort wherewith we ourselves are comforted. For as the suffering of Christ abound in us, so our consolation also aboundeth by Christ. So immediately, constantly goes back to Christ. And he said, your Christ, Jesus, he died upon the cross, and his suffering has comforted you, my brothers and sisters. How has he comforted? He died on the cross in the most gruesome way. The Apostle Paul said, Jesus comforted you by his death. He opened up a way that regardless of this life, you would be assured of having an eternal life and a place in God's kingdom. And that was a saving grace of all the brothers and sisters in the first ecclesia. You go to the conclusion verses of Hebrews chapter 11, and you'll find there that the men and women who were brought on trial, the magistrate said, if you confess that Caesar is your king, you have freedom. You have an extension of life. If you don't, then you are going to die. And they said, we only have one king, and that is Jesus. Jesus the Christ. And they said, well, then it is the death sentence upon you. They said, it may be the death sentence upon us, but we have the comfort in this, that you may put us to death, but we are part of the resurrection, and we shall live again, and that is what he wants. They said, the magistrate, well, we can give you resurrection. Just confess that Caesar is your king, and you have a renewed life. Come out of the prison of darkness. They said, but we only have one king, and that is Jesus the Christ. And so he's telling them they have the benefit of Christ's death and his life, his sacrifice in this way. Comfort us in particular this way. Now the Apostle Paul goes on to say in this way, and he says, whether we be afflicted, it is for your consolation and salvation. Our suffering is the means of comforting you by the word, spirit word that we're given to you, which is effectual to the enduring of the same suffering which we also suffer, or whether we be comforted, it is for your consolation or your comfort and salvation. And our hope of you is steadfast, knowing that as ye are partakers of the suffering, so ye shall also be of the consolation or of the comfort. And then he goes on, he tells them, you see, that he said, well, if you experience this comfort, You will know the benefit of it. You will know the benefit of it. And we know this is true. If you've had a sickness and recovered from it, and then you go and visit a brother or sister who has the same sickness, you're able to talk to them and tell them the benefits of the medication that you have, and that it's only for a short time, and you'll recover. Now, the reason I emphasize that, because this should be our role. Each one of us should have our role to be a physician or a comforter unto others. And we maybe don't do enough of that. And we can do it through the letters. We as an ecclesia do a very good job on writing Sunday morning, having these cards. We sign our names. They send to individuals. And the individuals see there's not one, but there's an ecclesia. Their family is praying for them, thinking of them, and concerned about them, and it be the comfort to them. We recently got a card from Sister Brown in Nanaimo regarding her husband's sickness. And she said there that we're all the family of Jesus Christ, and how wonderful is the care of our brothers and sisters and the prayers. And she concluded, by this we are truly comforted. And I was talking to another sister at the study weekend regarding Ray's condition, and she said, well, it's wonderful the way he is. As we all know, he has cancer of the lungs, and we know that it's, as it said, if it's not the will of God that he should die at this time, that he has a limited time to live. The sister said, I said, well, what about Brother Ray? Is he okay? Is he holding together? Is he faithful? She said, you wouldn't believe it. He goes to these certain clinic meetings with other men and women who have the same problem, and she said he's there telling them how wonderful the truth is that he has, and that he's not afraid of death because he knows he would belong to the kingdom. And I thought when she told me that, I thought, well, that's exactly what the Apostle Paul is telling the brethren and sisters in the ecclesia. He's telling them, the comfort you receive from Jesus Christ, giving you that hope, the comfort that you receive from me in defending the truth for you and making life easier for you by the Spirit word that I've given to you to make you strong and steadfast and upright, he says that way, he said, that's what our brother Ray, in that way. He gives it. And we can do the same. Our comfort and skills can extend beyond the walls of this ecclesia and help others to do it. So I think that's wonderful that we heard this of our brother in this particular way. And this is what Paul says to all the ecclesias. Whatever ecclesia he wrote, he saw it necessary to give this words of advice. I understand, brothers and sisters, what you're going through. And if you want me to boast, I can tell you that I've been through more than you, but I've been comforted by the fact that I saw Jesus on the way to Damascus, and he assured me that he would be with me. And I was further assured when the Lord Almighty introduced himself to me when I came to Corinth and told me that he would be with me, he would comfort me, or he would be by my side. And this is what Paul said to the Ecclesia of Thessalonica and all those others. He says, brethren, sisters, comfort one another with the words of comfort. Comfort one another. And we must do it in this way. So we see there's another interesting thing about this, because we remember the Apostle Paul had many difficulties and many trials. And he says in verse 8, speaking of the difficulty that he had, because some of the brothers and sisters say, well, Paul, you've never been trying like I have. You've never had the problems that I had. And Paul says to them, just hold on. The section is recorded in verse 8. For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble which came to us in Asia. You talk about trouble, I'll tell you what happened to me in Asia. And we don't have much in the way of information regarding that situation, but we do have some. But what I want you to notice here is the language that is used in this letter at this particular time concerning this experience in Asia. For it says this, we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were pressed out of measure, above strength, insomuch that we despaired even of life. So at that particular experience in Asia, he knew or saw himself on the death door. It was finished, as far as he concerned, of the trouble that he had at that particular time. He was upon that. And so we remember, do we not, we're told here regarding this language that in the ancient law of England, going back in the 17th century, around that time, in the ancient law of England, when an individual was brought before the court being guilty of some crime, they use a method in this way. If he refused to plead guilty, they had him lay down and they put a weight on his chest. And then they would say to him, "Are you guilty?" If he refused to plead guilty, then they would put another weight on top of that. And they would continually, the more he refused to admit his guilt, they would put more weight upon it, that finally he was crushed. He was crushed to death. And this is in Moffat's translation. He uses that language. And this is what the Apostle Paul is saying here, that we were pressed, or as Moffat said, we were crushed out of measure, crushed and crushed some time again, above strength, insomuch that we despaired of life. But under those conditions, which we haven't got time now, but we're later on we can give you further information on it, it relates also to Aquila and Priscilla, the situation with there and out of that, and we can talk a bit more about that. But what I want to add to this at this particular time, which I feel is more important, because he says in verse 9, "But we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God, which raiseth the dead." And in the margin, you'll find there, instead of the word sentence, it says the answer. He says, though I was in despair, though I was crushed and crushed and crushed by this this pressure of difficulties of that time, he said, but I had the answer. I had the answer or the sentence regarding this situation, because it was a lesson to me that you, Apostle Paul, you may be able to debate and work yourself out, and even before the magistrate or before Agrippa, any of those. He says, but you won't get very far for that way. Your delivery from this affliction will come through God, which raiseth the dead. And so that would be his release, and that would be his understanding regarding his situation when he was about to be put to death, or death came about him because of the situation. His answer was, so, for me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. And that's how the Apostle Paul was able to move from day to day. That was how he was able to deal with all his problems, tribulation, his sickness, and that. Because he says, when the Lord is finished with me, then my eyes will be closed in death. But, he says, I have this faith, I have this comfort, knowing that it says that God which raiseth the dead. And this is the preaching they had to give to these people, maybe more than today. Because they were constantly at the death door, because they never knew what was going to happen regarding the authority and so on. So this trouble that he had in Asia was not, as some think, a physical trial. Because we know he was not a strong man. He suffered from malaria and those kind of things. He was not a well-built man like Barnabas and those. But he was, as we found, as he said when he wrote to the Ecclesia at Philippi, I can do all things through Christ. Christ was his comforter. Christ had taught, he knew from the teachings of Christ that death was but a sleeping experience, and he would come again, he would be raised again. So, from verse 8 to 11, which we will have to continue with at another time, it contains Paul's deliverance from the deadly peril. And that's what he's, those verses there that we've dealt with, 8 and 9 and into there. And then he goes on to continue in his letter, in writing to them. He continues in this way and tells them regarding their future. So maybe we should step down now. And my appeal, as I say to you, is my appeal to you is that if you can try to remember that title of God. I'm sure that it will be a source of comfort to all of you regarding your life and your trials and your difficulties. And the Apostle Paul, as we hope that Jesus can look upon us, is able to say this when the conclusion of this section of his letter in verse 24. He said, Not for that we have dominion over you. I am not overlording you, but I am a helper of your joys. And he said this, the only that you will stand by your faith, and by it you will survive, and you will in the appointed time be comforted when you see Jesus face to face. Thank you very much.